6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning to the moderates, to the centrists. Good morning to you in your delusional world. Nice to talk to you. Mark Riley, how are you?
I'm doing all right, man. How you doing?
Nah, I'm going nuts.
Why are you going nuts?
I don't know why I'm going nuts.
Charlie.
My brain is peeling apart this morning.
Nuts is seven, man. It's only, you know.
All right, so I should slow down. I should build to the going nuts. I should take my time.
That's
going
right.
Nuts.
There
I don't know
you
what
go.
Some days I just, you know, the brain just peels apart. What are you going to do? I don't know what happened. I just know it started yesterday, and you know, it was one of those moments where I'm sitting at home, I'm like, God, am I going nuts? I think I'm going nuts. I wonder if I would know if I was going nuts. And I'm sitting there telling, you know, I'm saying this to three cats. So on some level, maybe I am going nuts. I'm at, you know, and you know, you cross over some line where you might be having a problem if you expect responses from your cats. You know, when you're sitting there going, so are you hungry? No, are you? No, tell me. Why are you looking at me like that? Do I look funny? It's my haircut, isn't it? I'm not happy with my new haircut. That's what's going on.
What's wrong with that? Your haircut's fine.
No, my cat doesn't like it. She told me.
Oh, the cat doesn't like it.
In a human voice. Imagine that. See, I told you. I'm losing it, dude. I'm losing it.
Well.
Get this email. This is a beauty. Love this one. I listened to your show this morning, and I must say you're not going to win any minds and souls by criticizing the Super Bowl or starting the show off with a discussion of a BDSM movie. Over half of America watched the Super Bowl. Yeah, 50-some-odd million people voted for Bush, too. Do we have to accommodate them, you moron? All right, how's your ratings? You will not reach the moderate right with that kind of material. Now, there's a couple of problems with that sentence. I didn't know we were trying to appeal to the moderate right. You know,
bondage in S&M movie is that person talking about?
Well, this guy
about?
Is so uneducated and stupid that he thought that the rules of the game, I guess, the Jean Renoir film that I was talking about, which is made in the 30s, was some sort of like code name. It must have tricked him to something in his collection. It's like, oh, I have rules of the game. That's a nasty movie. How could they be talking about that? Somehow we indicted him because he must have had that in his collection. There must be a bondage film called Rules of the Game that he owns. And he feels ashamed of, and that he decided to criticize our show because of our lack of appealing to the moderate right. It's so funny how many people, kind of attach, you know, a specific political agenda to our show. We are here in the morning doing the news from the point of view that we see is the truth. We're here entertaining people with our comedy. We're trying to, you know, sort of create a broad umbrella of topics and interesting things to talk about. But there are people like, you guys are losing the war. It's like, dude, we're doing a radio show.
Yeah.
We're doing an entertaining radio show. We're talking about a bunch of different things. It's like, yeah, you got to get on board. It's like, no, you got to shut up.
The war is in Iraq, not on the radio.
Is that war still going on, huh?
That war seems to be a war without end.
Someone should tell the moderate right.
Yes.
Hey,
well, the moderate right backs it.
Did I just slurp? Is that what the deal was?
Sure.
I've got this weird habit of doing that. I do them during my comedy show, too, now, man. I'll bring a Coke on stage. I'll just slurp it out loud on the mic just because I don't know what the effect of it is. But I like sometimes,
go ahead, do
like,
it.
Like after a joke, I'll just like...
Ooh.
I don't even know why. It's just it's a pacing thing. It's a new thing. It's my hook. Hey, that's the slurper. Is that the guy that slurps? Yeah, I love that guy. He's on TV and he brings a cup of water with him just so he can slurp in between jokes. Kayla, tell me about it. Root canal. Did you go to Costco, Kayla, the Costco hoe, cup of noodle
no,
guy?
No, my root canal actually went a little over, so I couldn't make it to Costco.
They stretched on the root canal?
Yeah, they stretched on the root canal, which I didn't need, actually.
Well, man, I'm sorry, dude. Do you have a mouthful of swollen mouthness?
No, I have a mouthful of something. I think there's cotton in there. I have absolutely no idea what they
did. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, usually they will stick. So did the roots come out okay?
I guess.
That they did?
What do you call it?
You didn't feel it.
Well, she gave me a needle, like five needles. After all that, like, she's in there with, like, this drill bit. It's like someone's song inside of your body.
Oh.
And so, you know, she's going at it for a little bit. And then she's, like, plucking, and I can feel it. I'm like, wait a second. I can still feel what you're doing.
Oh, yes. Man.
So she had to shoot me up a couple of other times.
Oh, my God.
It was bad times, man.
Oh, man. So
you know what that is? That's when they take that little instrument and they twist it around the root and they pull it out.
Oh!
I know from root canal. I know what it's like when you start feeling it.
Dude, I can't take it.
Yeah.
I didn't have those. Maybe I'm going to avoid them. I don't know. When I've had them already, I have my wisdom teeth out. What does it mean? Maybe I'm not. Maybe that's
root canal is from like eating bad stuff, I guess.
Maybe I'm going to miss that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But does she say anything while she's doing it? Like, oh, there's a big one.
Does that
like,
hurt?
Or like, I got it.
I don't
care. Here we go.
She wasn't that excited.
She didn't show it to you. It's like, wow, look at that.
Did she tell you to cut back on the beef jerky?
No, she didn't tell me that. But she did tell me to floss more and everything.
I floss every day, and I'm honest about that. I'm not going to lie to you.
Probably won't have a root canal then.
But I got receding gums. This is a powerful conversation. I hope we're appealing to the moderate right with this conversation. You know,
well, they got
important.
Gum disease.
Yeah, that's not all they need
root canals.
They've got a lot of big problems. Hey, I want to thank somebody because, you know, I tell you, the last couple of days, Riley, we've gotten some very thoughtful care packages.
Yes.
And you were out of the loop on this one. I'm gonna have to show you everything after the show.
I did see some of it.
I mean, we got this woman, Penelope, who lives in Wyoming. It just sent the nicest letter and care package. She sent she sent the scenic guidebook of Wyoming. She sent a cowboy boot copper toothpick holder.
Wow.
She sent pictures of these pronghorn antelopes from her property. She sent us a bag of M&Ms for Valentine's Day. She sent like caramel filled Hershey's kisses.
I saw them. I had to avoid all of that.
You and me both, buddy. That
I couldn't
hard,
have, no,
it's
no.
A slippery slope, man.
It certainly
it's
is.
It's just sitting right upstairs. There's bags of M&Ms. There's a whole bag of them up there,
right? We'll be right back after this.
but then we get this is the greatest thing. Now, I grew up in New Mexico, so I've seen the jackalope postcards, and I've seen the we catch them big out here with the trout strapped to the trucks. I've seen these postcards all my life. So we open this thing up, and there's a jackalope postcard, and Brendan's like Brendan P.W. McDonald's, like, man, that just seems so silly. That the animal makes no sense. And I'm like, it's like a rabbit with antlers. It's crazy. And I'm like, dude, it's not a real animal. And he's like, really? And I'm like, no. And it's like, and Larson, too, Clutch Larson, these guys are the smartest guys I know. These guys are brainiacs, for God's sakes. They know everything. And they're like, man, that's just an evolutionary conundrum, the jackalope. No, Larson didn't say that. But
conundrum?
Yeah, it's like, why would he have antlers? But you know what? I think Larson could probably explain why. If it were a real animal, he could probably explain why it did have antlers. But it's not. It's a mythical beast created by curio shops, you know, and taxidermists to make people wonder about the Southwest and the North. I guess that would be the Midwest.
Yeah.
Is it? What is? What would?
That's the Rocky
Wyoming.
Mountain states.
That's Wyoming's a Rocky Mountain state?
Yeah.
Well, and she sent a picture of her hounds. Look at those.
This is just... She must own a lot of property, man. I'm looking at the...
I know. All I could say is like, you know, wow, I wish I was living out there.
Yeah.
When you just look at that, there's like, look at that. Look at all the antelope. Can you see that out there in your cars? Like, I wish... Why don't we have that technology to where people can actually, like, a hologram would just sort of hover in their vehicles as they were driving to work. But thank you, Penelope. It was a very sweet letter. And you know what? I'll be honest with you. This is the kind of man I am. She sent along a recipe for a chipotle hummus. And who immediately went home and made it last night? Yes, me. Thank you.
Yes, yes.
And it's awesome. It's awesome. It was a great recipe. I hope she's up listening. I'm going to have to do this every hour to make sure she knows that we love her. You know what I mean? Because she's a little insecure about the letter. She's like, about how it would sound and how everything would come out.
No. Thank you, Penelope.
We had a great time, and I hope that that conversation appeals to moderate right people, because that's really what we're trying to do here on Air America. This really aggravates me. Like,
why?
How dare we criticize the Super Bowl? It's like, why? Because it's like, why wouldn't you? It's a big ceremonious nothing. It should just be a football game. Whenever somebody comes up to me and says, aren't you going to watch for the commercials? I know that the...
That's the most insane.
Phase one of Armageddon. That sign, that's like the first seal has been opened. The first seal of Revelations is, aren't you going to watch it for the commercials? As soon as that phrase has been uttered, which was a few years ago, that is the beginning of the end.
Super Bowl coverage Sunday began at 10 a.m. for a kickoff that did not start until 6:45 p.m.
I'm on an elevator with a guy. He goes, you're going to watch the game? I'm like, I don't know what time to start. He goes, well, the ceremony starts at like 6. I'm like, the ceremony?
Yep. That was Alicia Keys. And I mean, there was a lot of military pomp and circumstances. I really didn't watch. I actually turned to the broadcast to stay only for the first quarter, just before kickoff.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing the Paul McCartney footage. So let's come back. We're going to talk about worms. It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition is more than just a commute companion. Listen online at morningsedition.com. Morning Sedition, on the air, online. Listen at the office at morningsedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. There are such things as jackalopes, and there is a center.
No.
Let's go, Joey and the boys. Listen to these guys, man. Some days I want to be 20 years old again, Riley. So here we go. Morning Sedition. Don't be stupid. Right? That's it. Dig this. Like, you know, I've been, there's a couple things going on, and I just want to blow past them so I can get right to the meat of what we're going to talk about. Apparently, Condi Rice and Sharon and Abbas have decided that they're going to sit down and maybe do a peace talk, ceasefire thing. I'm going to be that vague about it. Am I right?
All right. What's happening is there is a summit that's going on in Egypt. Rice will not attend. She was in Israel, but she said that the rapprochement apparently between Abbas and Sharon seems to be going well. And appointed Lieutenant General William Ward, African-American, to act as the liaison between the Israelis and the Palestinians on behalf of the United States, evaluate security, that sort of thing. So things are moving forward. The really bizarre part is that the way the media has covered it, Rice seems to be the one that's getting all the credit for it. She didn't do that much.
Yeah, well, that's because it's a liberal media.
Yes, that's right.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
now,
that's it.
In another story, a woman in Saudi Arabia was beheaded publicly for murdering her mother-in-law. Now, Saudi Arabia follows a strict interpretation of Islamic law under which people convicted of drug trafficking, murder, rape, and armed robbery can be executed. Beheadings are carried out with a sword in public. So maybe the new government of Iraq will begin this practice because they are, you know, moving towards some version of Sharia law. So maybe that's something we can look forward to out of the newly freed Iraq.
Public beheadings.
Yeah, maybe it'll be televised.
That's progress.
Hey, you know, from Fear Factor to, you know, maybe that'll be the next big thing that, you know, as Iraq integrates itself into the global community in terms of whatever government this occupation is going to yield, perhaps we can start having some footage out of those public beheadings on American television. I'm sure that would be very exciting. Maybe that would be interesting halftime entertainment for the Super Bowl, a public beheading. Wouldn't that be, who wouldn't watch that? Also, suicide bombers killed at least 27 in Iraq, so things have really quieted down there. That's terrific. Of course, it is the week of condescension here at Air America Radio. Now, truth of the matter, truth be told, you know, I have made a somewhat of a shift in my life to not complete veganism, but I have been, you know, I've abstaining from, you know, the pork, the turkey, and the beef for a while.
You've become a pescator.
A pescator of sorts. You know, I'm just doing it day to day. I'm not changing my ideology. I just had a bad moment with Grizzle. But here on some other level, on another note, it's been found that worms feel no pain. So relax, folks. For those of you who are, you know, having a hard time going fishing or standing on the boat, just going, no, it's going to, oh, you heard that. Apparently, according to scientists, the common earthworm has a very simple nervous system. It can be cut in two and continue with its business, and it feels no pain. Professor Wench Farstad, who chaired a panel in Norway on this, apparently crabs and lobsters as well, not feeling a lot of pain. I don't know what.
That's when you put them in boiling water, though.
But I don't know how to explain that. I don't know what that is, but apparently it's not pain. Maybe it's a relief to them. Maybe they're like, yay, I feel good, it's hot. And then that's it.
And then you're on a table. You're on a plate.
It's like that first moment in a hot tub that's just too hot. A lot of people died in hot tubs because of that. They're like, yay, not good mix with cocaine and wine. Dead. But, well, that's just an interesting thing. It's just, I don't know how it's interesting, but worms, crabs, and lobsters.
Feel no pain.
Feel no pain. Okay. As, you know, I feel pain constantly. Also, here's another story, sort of related in the same lines, that Mercedes will be putting out a car that has cloth seats. They're putting out a non-leather car to accommodate some people who don't want leather. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's
what,
nice.
Here's a PETA researcher, P-E-T-A, Edmund Hafferbeck, quote, when you consider the skins of 4 to 15 cows are needed for each car, this means thousands of cows will be spared. This is a huge victory for animal rights. So people who are uncomfortable with leather can now drive comfortably in a car manufactured by a company that used to support the Holocaust.
Wait a minute. I don't understand something here. Thousands of cows will be spared?
Mm-hmm.
He's serious about that. They're not going to turn them into hamburger.
No, well, you know, that's an interesting question when it comes to this kind of stuff, is that because they're not using the skins for that, does that mean that you're actually sparing the life?
Sparing the life of the cow? I don't think so.
Yeah, but it does make people who want to spare those lives for cows feel better when they're driving their car.
Right, so they're driving in cloth seats, and then they have a barbecue where they eat the hamburger from the cow that they spared.
Well, you would hope that they would do it across the board, because there's plenty of wealthy sort of like people that feel like their lives are empty and latch onto these causes to make themselves feel better. You know, let's talk about our guest that's going to be coming up here in just a minute, Elizabeth Eckford. Could you put her into historical context for our listeners?
She was an inexorable and extraordinary part of Black history. She was one of nine students who was part of a tense three-week standoff back in September of 1957 at Little Rock Central High School in Little Rock, Arkansas. The governor of Arkansas, Orville Faubus, called out the National Guard to keep these nine Black students out of the previously all-white Little Rock Central High School. Dwight Eisenhower, the president at the time, after much soul-searching and initial resistance, called back the guard, called out the 101st Airborne to escort these kids into school, and their lives, from what I've been given to understand, because one of them became a cabinet member under Jimmy Carter, Ernest Green, who was one of the Little Rock Nine, but their lives were made a living hell. And when we come back, I want to talk to her about some very specific parts of that. And she now goes out and talks to young people about tolerance. Extraordinary story.
Great. Well, we'll have her when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour. Good morning, Jackalope. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Thank you, Penelope from Wyoming, for the wonderful care package with the Jackalope postcards, the M&Ms, and everything else. Tremendous.
Yeah.
Here's our liberal agenda for today, which...
No.
Oh, it's not? Oh, yeah, it's the Palm Pilot, which is delivered to us by... I'm tired. The liberal agenda hasn't come in yet, because that comes over a fax machine. This, of course, was brought to us by a guy wearing an accountant's outfit. What's an accountant's outfit? Hey, it doesn't matter, but it was Ramon. He had a tie on. He had a white shirt on. He had charts and diagrams. And he had one of those, yeah, he had one of those little visors that you see with guys who deal cards in the Old West and people bean counter
bookies,
visors.
Oh, bookies.
This is going on too long. All right, here, why am I sitting there holding this up? That's why. That's why I said liberal agenda. Cause it came in early and we just didn't hear the facts. You know, and I'm holding it in my hand. All right, here we go. George Bush's Palm Pilot for today. 7 a.m. breakfast, half a grapefruit. The cutbacks start now. 8 a.m. review budget cuts. Note, more than 150 programs cut outright or cut back. Take that, Reagan. Huh? Take that. Wake up and smell the bush. 10 a.m. cut budget for substance abuse and mental services. Note, there's no excuse for drinking, none. 1 p.m. eliminate $9 million for treating people with traumatic brain injury. Note, they'll never know. 3 p.m. Add $150 million for Laura's anti-gang recruitment program. Then add 50 cents. You see, I'm down. down. 5 p.m. Increased budget for abstinence program to $193 million. Note, we can stamp out teen erections in our lifetime. Yes! Stamp it out!
Yeah.
All right. You know, I talked to, I got an email from a friend of mine, Emily, who's a teacher. And she was talking, I brought her up yesterday about tolerance, about teaching tolerance in school. She was teaching a class on, I think it was Oscar Wilde.
Mm-hmm.
And she was teaching it to, a high school class. And she had some reaction from, from her class that was sort of like, my parents told us that, you know, that gays were, that it was a sin, that we can't do it, that we, you know what I mean, that she had. And then she started to explain bigotry. She tried to explain them what it meant to be intolerant, what it meant to be a bigot. And some girl just broke down crying. Mm. Broke down crying. And apparently because she realized that she was a bigot. And she was inconsolable. And now this teacher cannot, you know, she feels uncomfortable teaching it now. You see, this is how, like, you can't even begin to sort of facilitate a conversation around tolerance because you can't change the minds of, like, that kid should have been changeable.
Well, you know, I wonder if she wasn't changeable when she realized that you know, she, by whatever definition she used, for bigotry, that she herself was a bigot or she felt she was a bigot, maybe that should have been some form of catharsis for her. Maybe the teacher actually broke through and now she's going to look at these things differently. And I got to tell you, I've been through a number of situations with friends of mine who are white who've gone through that same kind of thing. They live their lives a certain way. They've been taught certain things. There's certain things that they've gleaned from their environment about race and about racism. And then one day, suddenly, they realize that all of these things that they've been taught, all of these things that they've been hearing at the dinner table or whatever, finally don't really compute in their world.
But I guess the fear on her behalf as a teacher and in concern about her job and creating this dialogue is that if this kid, you know, or if a number of kids go home and say, you know, our teacher told us this, and then these, you know, religious or sort of narrow-minded parents who feel that the teacher overstepped their bounds makes a stink about it on the school level, then there's a chance that, you know, this teacher, for doing the right thing and actually providing, you know, a forum for people to question things, which is what school is about, you know, a place where, you know, where discussion occurs and minds are opened and encouraged, that if these a certain group of parents make a big enough stink, all of a sudden this teacher has to worry about her place in the school. It has to worry about her job because she was teaching kids to think for themselves. That kid might have had a catharsis. I mean, I would have been thankful for it, but maybe she freaked out. You know, I mean, it's just like my question is that to me, in America, in a democratic society, that's what schools should encourage: growth, free thought, and they should be taught a fact based education. And that's another issue in and of itself. This is just a discussion about tolerance and about, you know, bigotry. I mean, these kids, some of them are, there is a war on tolerance going on.
There is a war on tolerance, and the fact is, I believe that the Christian right is going to go too far in this. They're going to push too hard. They're going to push people who would normally be maybe even in their corner on some of these issues,
mm-hmm.
that they're going to push them back the other way because they're just too narrow-minded, too intent on dealing with the political aspect of their religious agenda,
mm-hmm.
which really is to get a lot of this stuff into law. And we see, Mark, over and over and over again in this age of George W. Bush, God help me, I'm saying that the political, the religious, the economic, all is part and parcel of an attempt to change the way Americans live their lives. We've said this before, and we're seeing it ongoing, and that kind of fear is exactly what these people are trying to engender in teachers. They want teachers to be afraid to teach tolerance.
But, yeah, she's checking herself.
Yeah.
It has that
chilling effect.
Right. It has that effect on so many levels. Even to have a liberal discussion, even when people, like, make assumptions about what, you know, we're supposed to be doing here and what it means to be a liberal or a Democrat, that people who have become afraid to talk in the face of this belligerence, in the face of this narrow-mindedness, in the face of this war on tolerance and inability inability to engage in an open-hearted, open-minded discussion about fairness, about civil rights. You know, I'm sorry to our listeners. Elizabeth Eckford has called us. She's ill.
She's ill, yeah. And hope she gets well.
But, you know, just, I mean, the courage of somebody like Elizabeth Eckford to, you know, to cross those lines, you know, at that time, you know, it requires the courage of teachers and certain kids, too, to stand up to their parents in certain respects and say, you know, and stand up for the right to engage in just your human rights and your civil rights and the rights of a person who lives in a democracy to learn, you know, about reality. To learn about, you know, what, you know, how to engage with other people and not be, you know, judgmental of other people immediately and think you're right.
Some of my earliest memories of political discussions within my family came about the Little Rock Nine.
Mm-hmm.
These nine black young people who went to this high school in the Now, mind you, this high school had 1,900 students. So nine black students against 1,900 was, I mean, those are no odds at all. Elizabeth Eckford says that there were probably about 55, 60 kids who constantly harassed both physically and mentally those nine students.
Isn't that amazing? Because I bet you there was, like, you know, hundreds of Americans across this country on Sunday at Super Bowl parties who would be afraid to say they were liberals.
Oh, well, there's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. But, I mean, these were young black people who were afraid to exercise their God-given right as Americans.
But they did it.
Yeah, they did it.
That's what I'm saying, is that they're, like, the amount of cowardice in now and just, like, you know, just regular, like, you know, people are, the amount of courage it took at that time, like, is almost unfathomable to Americans today.
That's absolutely true, and that's why the work that Elizabeth Eckford is doing and speaking to younger people about her experience is so important.
Yes.
Because young people now really can't conceptualize an America where they couldn't go to the high school they wanted to go to, where high schools were not, I mean, most black kids attend predominantly black high schools, but the idea that you could not go and sit at a lunch counter, the idea that you could not go to a high school except at the point of a gun. People need to understand this. Dwight Eisenhower called out the 101st Airborne, okay, to see to it that these nine kids were admitted to this school after Orville Faubus, the governor of Arkansas, literally stood in front of the school and said, oh, no, you're not. You're not going to allow these children, because as far as Faubus was concerned, this was the beginning of a slippery slope that would change the nature of the so-called Old Confederacy. Remember that the 11 states of the Old Confederacy and, I believe, Missouri and Oklahoma, in addition, 13 states in all, had laws on the books saying that black and white students could not go to school together.
And, folks, this is, you know, it's less than 50 years ago.
Yep.
I mean, this is new history. This is just yesterday.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people, because of the pace of culture now and the amount of input we have from all different areas, have a very difficult time contextualizing history. This is like yesterday, man.
Yeah. And see, the other thing, and a lot of people don't talk about this, the black communities of 1957 were conflicted about subjecting children to this kind of hate, this kind of hostility. There were some people in the black community said, we should fight this battle on another front that does not involve children.
But see, that's the same sort of argument that was happening, like, you know, in, you know, I feel sort of limited in my education and my knowledge of this stuff, but it just seems that within the black community, there seems to be an intellectual, if not active, contingent within the community that's saying, let's not make a scene. Let's,
yeah,
you know, let's do this another way. Let's accept what our limitations are and work within the system. And then there's another side that says, no, we have to, you know, push through and change things because this is wrong.
Yeah, we must confront the system. And during that same period, remember that Brown versus Board of Education was 1954. The Montgomery bus boycott was 1955. This incident took place from the 4th of September through the 25th of September, 1957. This was a time of great ferment. And torment, in fact, in southern communities across the country, and eventually it spread north, where the segregation that was taking place was not codified into law, but was about housing and that sort of thing. So the people attended either all white or all black schools because they lived in neighborhoods that were predominantly white. My older brother was denied access to a school about 10 years before this took place in Little Rock, Arkansas. He was 8 years old, and the principal of the school literally stood in front of the door. This was in suburban New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Stood in front of the door and wouldn't let him in.
And this type of racism still exists today. It's in different, you know, it's obviously in different guises. It's in, you know, it's, some of it's institutionalized, and these conversations continue today. It's just not as dramatic as it was, but some of this stuff has not changed. We're going to come back, and we're going to start addressing this disastrous budget that the neocon death cult has presented us with. It's 46 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on the highest-rated, most-respected news show in America on Air America Radio.
Hey, 50 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
It is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Oh, there it is.
Bam.
It's a liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Here are your marching orders for today, folks, 7 a.m. Where is it? What? It's the wrong thing. Boy, I'm all over the place. Here we go. One, parade around.
Wow.
What day is it, man? Are we okay? It's 2007, isn't it? All right, here are your marching orders for today. One, parade around drunk wearing beads. Notes, also do something for Mardi Gras. Two, condemn Israeli-Palestinian peace talks. This could completely ruin your anti-Zionist Oscar acceptance speech. You know who I'm talking to. Three, praise Fidel Castro for banning smoking in public places in Cuba. Now it really is paradise. Yow. Four, condemn mud wrestling by military personnel in Iraq as a waste of precious topsoil. What? What is that? Five, today's phrase is drop it into conversation. There's one place where you can cut the budget, man. I know one guy on the government payroll who hasn't done a thing in 4 years. Wake up, sheeple. The dead wood's in the White House. You know what I'm saying? Dead wood. That's some dead wood that's like, you know, showing us that clearly they are unashamed about bankrupting the U.S. government to privatize everything. Hey, see you later, old people. You know what I mean? Social Security. These cuts, the budget cuts, you know, I it's hard for me to wrap my brain around this stuff, Riley, because I need to take some sort of class in United States economics. I have to learn how all this stuff works. But it seems to me what he's trying to do is put a lot of money into tax cuts and the military spendings, and now when you look at this budget, the cost of that is going to be, there's going to be cuts in health policy, there's going to be cuts in education policy, there's going to be cuts in, you know, basically he's just saying, hey, look, you know, either the poor can adapt or die, and the old people, it'll be okay in a few years because then everything will be peaceful. Okay, so don't you worry, I'll see a peaceful person. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, are you having trouble with that? That Walker, oh, that's okay. See, you're at peace now.
No,
all right, and now also he's like, you know, he's putting all this money into faith-based initiatives to sort of, you know, take the to buttress a lot of different problems.
What he's doing, and we have to look at this in the long
term. Thank God, Riley. Please, please stop this travesty.
No. Let me explain something to you.
Okay.
In order to understand what Bush's long-term agenda is, you got to step back from this budget and realize that what he's doing.
Okay, I'm back.
There you go, you're back. All right, now, here we are.
Makes sense now.
All right. There are two different kinds of expenditures that this budget covers. One is mandatory spending. In other words, stuff that he has to spend, which is like Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. These are programs that, with the, you know, his privatization scheme notwithstanding, the government has to, by law, provide these.
But he'd much rather see them gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And that's where all this comes in.
All right.
If you step back and look at this, he's trying to freeze discretionary spending. Discretionary spending is the spending that he doesn't have to spend.
Okay.
It's not mandated that he has to spend. Stuff like Amtrak, stuff like the COPS program that put more police on the streets, the firefighters, these kinds of programs he has the ability to mess with
right.
on one level or another.
Okay.
It is an overall budget that is $2.57 trillion, which is a decrease in non-discretionary spending of about 0.7%. That's just the first step in an evolutionary process that I believe will end up with a wholesale assault on the mandatory spending, because that's where the money is. That's where the biggest percentage of the budget is, in mandatory spending, spending that he cannot cut.
So you're saying to me sort of what I was saying in my sort of broad, uneducated way, is that there is a concerted effort on behalf of the neocon death cults, you know, economic policy to bankrupt the government to a point where they will be forced, you know, to privatize social programs. That, you know, everyone would be forced to get on board to privatize social programs.
Well, yeah. And
coerced,
and
I should say.
They would be coerced. You're talking about 9 of 15 cabinet-level departments will get less money in the 06 budget than they are getting now.
So he's basically saying, look, if you just give me the Social Security thing, we can make it okay.
Yeah, give me the Social Security thing. And remember that he has left out of this budget. We talked about this yesterday. Spending on the war in Iraq, the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
What is that, like $5 billion a day, for God's sakes?
Yeah. And, of course, the money for the beginning of the Social Security privatization scheme, which is supposed to cost somewhere on the order of $2 to $3 trillion. And Cheney, by the way, just this past Sunday finally admitted that this was true.
$5 billion a month, not a day. That would be really big, $5 billion a day.
Well, yeah, well, hey, man, you never know.
That's right.
At the rate this is going.
Okay.
But that's not even included in this budget. The military stuff is going to have, it'll have a separate budget line. He's asking, I believe, for $80 billion on top of the $25 billion that's already, that he's already gotten. So what we're looking at here is a budget that, on the one hand, hides some of the spending as a separate entity. See, because when you say, and what he, his overall goal here, this is what he tells his conservative friends, we want to cut the deficit in half by 2009.
But not the whole deficit. This is a tricky language thing, right?
Yeah, it is a tricky language.
His budget puts him on the track to have the deficit by 2009, but doesn't say that he won't reduce the total by half, but the percentage of the total economy by half.
Yeah.
All right. That is something I can barely even explain, but I have an understanding of it.
Yeah. What he's saying is that as a share of the national economy, the deficit would decline from 3.6 to 1.5.
So that's the deficit in relation to the economy, not the total debt.
No, exactly.
Oh, this is tricky BS. This is crap. This is ridiculous. And look at this. How about the increases in Pentagon spending and also the increases in health and science, but not just health and science, in faith-based health and science. Real health and science gets gypped.
Yeah, well, that's the intelligent design crew. They're the ones that will be getting
the
moment.
Christo-fascist zombie brigades who are dictating their war on tolerance. Oh, my God. Riley.
We're going to get into more of this because there's some other really...
Not if my brain blows up.
Don't worry about that. We'll be right back. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Back at 6 past the hour, it's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
We are talking about the budget. We are going to continue talking about the budget. I want to get a couple of things out of the way. Before we do that, I will be performing this Saturday night at the Poway Center for Performing Arts near San Diego. I'm doing Jerusalem Syndrome. It's going to be good. It's going to be exciting. I will be at Symphony Space in New York on February 17th. That is the following Thursday. So a week from this Friday, I'm going to be tired. But that show is quickly selling out. If you want to get tickets for that, I have to get my aunt's seats. Not my aunt. That's got nothing to do with anybody here. Also, we're looking for a spy. That's right. If you've got a kid who's going to be learning intelligent design, we want to wire them. And we want to hear what they're being taught in the great war on tolerance. And also, we would like you to email us. We will tell you how to go about bugging your kid. And we've got the info. Also, T-shirts, hats, Oh, yeah. You email us at sedition. I'm sorry, I just answered a voice in my head. You email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. You can also go to morningsedition.com and get hats, T-shirts, mouse pads. And you can get a shirt with me and Mark on it. And
yeah.
Cartoon heads.
Yeah.
Mugs, whatnot. Moving on, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, has been in Mexico for a week. He was in Texas briefly. We had a very riveting conversation with him from Texas, if you recall, on the show. I can't remember what it was about, but boy, it was compelling, wasn't it? It was something about...
We talked to him?
We did talk to him. So, Dan, why don't you come in here and tell us about the trip to Mexico, which I thought, you know, I was under the impression that Pashman went down with his buddies and they did this sort of like, you know, gonzo, let's tear Mexico up tour. But it turns out that, no, he went down with Linda and Louis Pashman of New Jersey and Howie Pashman.
And we tore things up in Mexico.
Dude, I don't know. Maybe, I guess you've got a good family.
The Pashman family, we live with gusto, man.
If I got an invitation, how old are you, 27?
Yeah.
22? 20? What? How old are you?
27.
All right, 27. If I was 27 and my mom and dad called me up and said, do you want to go on a trip with us? I'd be like, are you out of your mind?
To go on a trip?
Are you out of your mind? I mean, you know, if I went on the trip, I think the last trip I took with my parents, I was maybe 22, and the entire trip was about, like, how the hell do I get away from my parents?
Right.
Okay, maybe we had a different life. I mean, I've met your parents. They're very pleasant.
To respond to that, I mean, they did also go to Oaxaca for 4 days, and I chose not to accompany them on that part of the trip. So,
you got whatever you need to get out of the way.
4 to 5 days of family time was good, and then that was cool, and then I was ready to head back home, but we had a good time, and, I ate more different, I mean, for those of you who don't know, you guys know all too well that I love foods wrapped in flour tortillas.
Dan's a wrap guy.
I wrap everything. And in Mexico, they serve everything. They'll give you a margarita with a flour tortilla.
But they're not called the wrap there. You're going to the root of the wrap.
Right.
You don't say, like, wow, this is just like a wrap. No, this is a burrito. It's a burrito in Mexico.
That's
true. It's not a wrap sandwich.
But, Mark, this is like me going to my Graceland.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know.
This is like...
You're going to the source.
Yes, I ate everything wrapped in a flour tortilla.
Okay.
Everything.
All right.
It was phenomenal.
But non-exotic tortillas. These were, you know, plain white flour tortillas. I think occasionally you'll do, you're kind of a shishi with the tortillas occasionally.
Not at all.
Oh, only white tortillas?
If there's something else there, then maybe I'll take it. But I'm saying that, I mean, old, reliable, plain white flour tortilla made fresh, homemade at the restaurant or at the place.
Sure.
Can't beat it. You can't beat that.
You're absolutely right. I enjoy that. There are some places in L.A. where you go and they actually fry the tortilla right on the...
That's what I was doing.
We're digressing.
Yeah.
Where were you in Mexico?
We were in Zihuatanejo, which is on the Pacific coast. People out there probably best know it from... it's a place in Shawshank Redemption that Morgan Freeman keeps saying they're going to go to. Yeah.
Zihuatanejo? What's that, Chris? Can you spell that for me?
Z-I...
Watanejo. Yeah, I got you. Right. So what was this, like a Club Med situation, or did it have any integrity whatsoever? I'm figuring you were your parents, you weren't up in the hills.
So we were not roughing it, that is true. It's basically this small hotel on the beach, and we just basically moved from meals to lounge chairs to ocean to pool.
Just the Pashman clan moving from lounge chairs to ocean to pool.
We split off in different groups. My brother and I went to play tennis. I would go for a walk by myself. On the beach, I listened to the mix that I'm working on for you. It's still in the test pilot phase.
The anti-U2 mix,
something like that.
The Black Crowes mix,
dude. Yeah. I've been trying to. I'm trying to listen to a little Black Crowes. I'm just trying to listen to it. I'm trying to understand, because being a liberal progressive guy that I am, I want to open my heart to whatever it is. The thing I don't understand. Here you are. You're playing tennis with Howie. You're hanging out with Linda and Lewis Pashman of New Jersey on your vacation. You see yourself as this rebel. It doesn't sound like a rebellious vacation.
I'm not really a rebel as much as I am an iconoclast.
Oh, yeah?
Which is a fine line.
Uh-huh.
You see, Mark, the way I view it is I'm going to do what makes me happy, and if that happens to be what everyone else is doing or no one else is doing, it doesn't make much difference
to me. Yeah, but what about the part where you doing what you do that makes you happy also simultaneously destroys everything that you live for?
It doesn't, though.
Now, I know. That's what I'm saying. You're not the real deal.
I don't even really follow you. You lost me. I don't even know.
Come on, man. What about the self-destruction? What about ruining your life? What about making it all fall apart so you got to rebuild it? Dan, I want you to get dirty.
Try sitting in a pool bar for a couple hours, man.
Okay.
We're not going
there. What's a pool bar? A swim-up bar. I've never discovered a swim-up bar in my life until I got to Mexico. It is exactly what you might imagine it would be.
Yeah.
You're in the pool,
yeah,
sitting on a bar stool in a pool, and there's a bar there with a bartender serving you drinks, and you're in the pool while sitting and drinking.
Wow, that sounds like an alcoholic's heaven.
It's quite amazing.
So what, do you just stand there? What do you...
Well, you sit there, you talk. It's like being in a bar, but you're also in a pool. It's 85 degrees out, but you're not getting hot because you're in the water.
So you're sitting there with Lewis and Linda Passman having a few cocktails, and Howie standing there in the pool.
Yep. Yeah. And, well, let me tell you, the best thing about it, you don't have to get up to pee.
Whoa, whoa, hey. Whoa. I take it all back.
I didn't think he was going
I take it all back. You are a rebel.
Yeah, man.
I see how you get it out. You're just like, you sit there with the weird blind satisfaction that your urine is spreading throughout your family. That's how you fight back.
No, it's just the blind satisfaction that I am at a bar and I'm peeing and I didn't even have to get up to do it.
Did you really do it?
I didn't think he'd have the stones to admit
awesome.
It.
You really did. Wow, Passman. You know what?
I have no shame. We've established that in this show. That has been established.
I underestimated you. You are the real deal.
Thank you.
Johnny Cash would be proud.
That's right.
Of Passman standing in a pool in Mexico at a bar with his folks just peeing.
Wow.
You do. You walk the line, Passman.
I do. I cross it.
All right.
We know.
Yeah. All right. We got to talk about the budget. We'll be back. What?
I guess, real quick, Mark, I just want to buttress what you were saying earlier about Symphony Space gig. I want to give a warning to the listeners out there.
Yes.
Linda Passman is cornering the market on Symphony Space tickets.
Oh, my
so
God.
So I urge listeners to go to the tour date section of morningsedition.com. Get your tickets now.
Thanks a lot. So what, is the entire Passman family in the state of New Jersey coming?
There's going to be quite an entourage
for
you.
I heard Bruce might be there.
Yeah, I believe it.
14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning's Edition, our highest rated, most respected news show in America. On Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
I think Passman, it's weird. Sometimes I'll say something and he gets this look on his face like it's just not registering at all. See, I come from a different generation, Riley, as do you. I come from the generation where it's hard to have full respect for somebody that hasn't had the courage to lose complete control of their life for a little while.
I did that in the early 70s.
Sure, sure. I mean, that was the sort of model. It's like, did you live?
Yeah, all right.
I'm glad I did. A lot of people don't. But, he just wants to have a good time. He doesn't have any real self-hatred, though I keep pushing to find it. It just doesn't seem to register. Whenever I present him with sort of the opportunity to show me some darkness, there's nothing there. It's just his face goes blank. There's nothing but a beam of overconfidence. But anyways, my therapist, as you know, I have to do my dreams. I have to take them. I have to write them down. I go in with them on Thursday. Here's last night. I am Rex, king of Mardi Gras, with a jeweled crown and scepter and a red cape lined with ermine. Yes. Aside from the fact that I'm also wearing silver tights, I look terrific. I'm seated on a fancy throne, and we're parading slowly up Canal Street in New Orleans on a magnificent float of green and purple and gold. Before me, a brass band heralds my arrival, and my masked attendants throw trinkets to the crowd who fight over them and hurt each other. I wave to my loyal subjects and to the scores of inebriated women who, purely out of respect, show me their breasts. Everything is perfect when suddenly our float gets slammed from behind. I turn around and I see a black Hummer driven by an insane pirate with an eye patch. It's Dick Cheney. He pulls up next to us and rams us from the side. Laughing maniacally, he tosses a canister of tear gas at the float. Then he leaps from the speeding Hummer onto the float and waves his sword at me. Arrgh! I raise my scepter over my head and said, "Villain, I am Rex, king of Mardi Gras, benevolent and protector of the 24-hour party people. You shall not prevail."
And Cheney says, if nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve. Not only no, but hell no. I was about to tell him that no one was asking him to run, and that the Republicans probably begged him not to run, but just then he lunged at me with his saber. I deflected his blows with a scepter, and considering his heart problems, Cheney had surprisingly good footwork, folks. He snarled and said, I've got my plans laid out. I'm going to serve this president for the next 4 years, and I'm out of here. I said, here's a little something to help you on your way. And I take a handful of purple beads, and I throw them at him. They hit him in the face, and Dick Cheney explodes into a million tiny beads, which I throw to the crowd. They're so grateful they show me their naked asses, too, purely out of respect. I woke up. My bed was filled with crawfish etouffee. Mardi Gras, buddy. It's Mardi Gras.
Hey, Trinidad, Brazil, New Orleans.
I never went to the big parties. You know, a couple dead shows when I was younger, but that's it. I never went to the big parties. Always just a couple of people. You know, we'd have beads and show each other our boobs. It's a sad Mardi Gras.
Oh, you did that? Okay.
Sure, why not? So look at this. I'm looking at this budget, and I'm looking at some of these increases. Now, there's a $38 million increase in promoting sexual abstinence, that bringing the total of that program to $192.5 million. How baffling is that? All right, he's going to provide a total of $270 million by 2008 for abstinence-only sex education, which doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's ridiculous. It's not practical, and it is not fact-based education. National Institutes of Health would rise by 0.5% to $28.6 billion. All right, but biomedical research costs are increasing by more than 3.5%. So that's losing money. So actual research into things that could help and heal people, nothing.
No.
But religious money, that's going right to where it needs to go, right? To the religious people. $26 million to fund 40 new health center sites in high-poverty counties. That sounds like a good idea, but faith-based and community programs are encouraged to compete for these grants, which I can guarantee you means that there's not going to be any reproductive services available to those people.
None.
That this is going to be, you know, an ideological coup on behalf of the Christo-fascist zombie brigade, and that this is narrowing democracy. It's not promoting democracy.
Well, you know, this whole faith-based initiative thing means that, you know, people will be, or children in many cases, will be confronted by folks who are paid to tell them, well, let's talk about God and sex.
Yeah.
And why you shouldn't do this and why you should do that. And the main thing, Mark, that you pointed out is that it does not work. But again, Bush is looking to accomplish some very specific things politically with this. We talked to some people yesterday that told us that Bush knows that a lot of these cuts are not, in fact, going to go through. There was a press conference here in New York yesterday with a bunch of the people from the New York delegation about the Amtrak cut, which would go down to zero from $1.2 billion. In other words, eliminating the subsidy for Amtrak, which would plunge the railroad into instant bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Instant bankruptcy.
It just seems like he's moving a lot of the onus of taking care of the poor and the sick onto the philanthropic incentives of the wealthy, okay, and to faith-based initiatives, to faith-based community money.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that, you know, that is not really engaging in the democratic process in terms of, you know, people, you know, that should be entitled to certain rights and freedoms in this country, but it is, you know, putting that under the restrictions of these sort of private donors and church groups.
Yeah.
It seems criminal almost to me.
Well, it is part and parcel of what the administration wants government to get out of certain areas in terms of helping the poor. And also providing opportunity for poor young people, poor college students. They're increasing the Pell Grants, which is something that they were that he promised to do back in 2000 but did not do during the first term. But at the same time, he cut $6 billion in Perkins loans for low- and middle-income college students. What he's doing, and you see this again and again when you look closely at his budget priorities, is pitting very poor people against working poor people.
Okay, but and also, isn't he basically, you know, doing this to benefit corporate structures and privatizing structures over the well-being of the people of this country? Isn't he saying that, like, you know, like in red states now, you're seeing this Medicare, these Medicare cuts on a state level really have an effect on a lot of people losing their health coverage, you know, having their health coverage compromised, you know, because of these cuts. Now, isn't that basically saying, well, you know, pretty soon the HMOs will step in and you will have to, you know, work within that. And so he's basically tossing a bone to privatize health industries, you know, at the risk of people dying and their health being compromised because of that.
Well, again, this is part and parcel of, I mean, even,
I'm sure I'm simplifying.
Even the veterans, even the money that would go to the VA would be spent differently so that veterans, for example, would have a $250 access fee. Certain veterans, supposedly higher income veterans, but they would have to pay $250 to get access to health care under the Veterans Administration.
Wow. You know, we're going to be covering this, you know, throughout the next hour or so on and off here. But, you know, coming up next, we have our very popular liberal confessional. So if you've got some sins you need to get off your chest, this is your time. It's 866-303-2270 is the number. I'm just putting that out there so you can start ruminating on your week and where you you transgressed the progressive agenda to meet your own selfish needs. or you just are full of contempt and hate that you want to unburden yourself and get it off your chest. We provide a service here. Right?
Yeah, man, this is what we do.
This is our faith-based reaching out.
This is how we roll. Stay with us because we got that, the liberal confession. As Mark said, more about the budget, which is a killer, when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time, but when we need salvation, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to step into the comfort of the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. But first, it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, Brother Riley, I've been accused of straying from liberal scripture. Last week, some listeners demanded that I stop parroting the right framing of rebels in Iraq as insurgents. Instead, they wanted me to refer to these kidnappers and killers as freedom fighters.
Can you do that, Mark, in good conscience?
No, I cannot. There's no reason not to call the insurgents insurgents. I understand that incorrect definitions can serve the liberal cause as much as they serve the rights, but I can't help myself. I got to use the right words.
Still, you did defy liberal dogma and refer to a forbidden text.
If you mean the Merriam-Webster dictionary, yes.
But Mark, for the left to have a message as powerful and succinct as the right-wing message, you may have to twist some definitions. Can you do that?
I don't know, Brother Riley. What's next? What if the same listeners want me to call the 9/11 hijackers attention-starved result-getters?
Mark?
What?
Maybe you should start out by using some word reassignments that won't trouble you as much.
Like what?
Instead of using a right-wing catchphrase like, morning, boss, try saying, drink much, fat ass.
That makes no sense, right?
It's an exercise in substitution, Mark. It'll disorient you enough until you actually believe what you're saying is true. For instance, instead of saying thank you to people, say, adore me, minion.
But that's what I'm thinking anyway.
Okay, bad example. Yeah. Try this. Instead of telling your wife, I love you, say, I'm so needy, I want to crawl all over you like a blood-starved tick.
Again, thinking it already.
So what's the problem? You're already saying stuff you don't mean. Why not fudge it on liberal dogma, too?
All right, so is that my penance?
No! Your penance is to say what you really mean every time. And I'm also going to have you shave my neck. I'm in between haircuts right now, so shave my neck with this new blade and go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Well, Brother Riley, thanks for easing my burden. I don't want to be. I don't want it square to round it off. By the way, this is weird. You right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
If anyone else out there wants to confess and seek absolution in our liberal confessional, you can give us a call right here and now at 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Are you sure you don't want to round it off?
Hey, wait. You're getting near my carotid artery there, Marin.
All right, so you better pay attention.
I'm sorry.
Who's holding the blade, buddy?
I'm sorry,
all
me
right.
And you.
Here we go. Let's do this thing. Tom in California, listen to the quake. What is your sin, my friend?
Actually, I had a dream where President Bush actually spoke in complete sentences and even quoted a line from Shakespeare, and I actually liked him better.
Wow.
Bill Shakespeare?
So that's a sin of the. That's a very interesting sin. It's a sin of the unconscious realm. Well, Tom, I think what you're going to have to do is sort of cry yourself to sleep by saying, I hate George Bush. I hate him. I hate George Bush.
Do I have to crawl in a fetal position or what?
I think, yeah, you're going to need to do that. You're going to need to crawl into a fetal position, and I would abstain from sex for 2 weeks.
Ooh. Oh, well, that's easy to do.
We just have to reprogram your unconscious, and I think that should do it, Tom.
Okay, I'll just walk around in stupor. That's easy to do since the election. But
you
not just Democrats, hopefully, again.
Yeah, me too. I hope so, too, Tom. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Tom.
It's a hard transgression to deal with when the unconscious...
Yeah,
is the transgressor, Riley.
It is.
Yeah, and sometimes you have no control over that. You just have to retrain it through repetition. You know, he's got to reprogram his brain. Something's gone soft in there. Sherry in Arkansas streaming. How are you?
Hi, Sherry.
What's your sin?
Well, this past Christmas season, I managed a store in the local mall, and all of my staff and I were very liberal, and we discussed politics openly. We were all real comfortable discussing it, and my staff, I felt really, you know, that they could come here, we could share ideas. And when we got ready to close the store, our district manager came in. He started talking about how the Democrats were embarrassing themselves, you know, protesting Condoleezza Rice. And he said, why can't they just realize that they're wrong and they're, you know, embarrassing themselves? And I asked my staff to please be quiet, not to comment back to the district manager, and just to get through the day.
Oh, my God.
And I have just felt so guilty.
Yeah, that is something.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Well, I think that there's only one way to combat that particular transgression. Have you been gossiping effectively about your boss and saying maybe, you know, bad things about his manhood, perhaps, maybe saying, just, you know, making sure that, you know, you are the queen of your staff and they all understand what true righteousness is and that he's a little man?
We really have.
Well,
our own district manager was like we were, so we were all really comfortable together.
Yeah.
He followed policy, everything perfect.
Yeah.
Just that vote policy, he cut corners, he put more work on all of us while he sat around doing nothing. So, yeah, we've had a great time the last 2 weeks complaining about him.
Oh, good. Well, I think that might be your penance is to, and I think it would also be helpful for you guys to go ahead and, you know, maybe laugh in his face if you find the right opportunity.
Yeah. You know, call him little man behind his back, but just loud enough so he can hear it.
But this is like, you know, what we're doing is we're providing a release.
I have felt so guilty. This has just bothered me no end the last couple of weeks.
Well, I think that maybe you should actually, as a reasonable penance, if it comes up again, just say politely, I don't really agree with your politics, and I understand, but there's, you know, it's you're wrong.
Yeah, there you go.
I really feel like I let my staff down because they always felt they could say anything to me. But I asked them that day to just, you know, be quiet. And I felt so bad.
Okay, well, then there's only... Okay, you know what? You're going to have to unionize the staff. That's the only
That's
thing you
good.
Can do. Thanks for your call, Sherry.
Thanks, Sherry.
Bye.
Yeah, unionize the staff. There
yeah,
you go.
Why not? What do we got now? This is... A call from New Jersey. How are you? Good morning. What is your sin?
It's Brian.
Okay, Brian.
Hey,
how
Brian.
Are you?
How are you doing, guys?
I'm okay.
Well, actually, about a week ago in the Bergen Record, I saw a picture of Jenna Bush in a very nice-looking dress.
And since then, I've kind of had this weird, odd sexual fantasy about Jenna Bush.
Yeah, well, we're gonna have to work on that penance. But you have to realize sometimes those kind of feelings aren't coming from a good place to begin with. So, what is the fantasy exactly?
I just have actually. It's funny you guys talking about Mexico. I've been to Cancun twice, and I just really could see myself down there with Jenna and having a couple drinks, and she has been a self-proclaimed pothead, and.
Oh, God. I can see where this one's going.
So
it would probably be a really good time.
Oh, so you guys get all.
But her values are absolutely disgusting.
But you figure, at least her dads are. But I mean, when you're high, you're high. Anyways, we're going to have to, you're going to have to hold on. We're going to have to come back with your penance, Brian. We'll be right back with Brian's penance and more of your sins. 866-303-2270 is the number of the Liberal Confessional. It's 42 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here. That's Mark Riley over there.
Hi.
The confession booth is open. It's morning sedition, liberal confessional time, 866-303-2270. We're about to give penance to Brian in New Jersey, who admitted to having active sexual fantasies that involved booze and drugs with one of the Bush daughters, Jenna. Here's your penance. You ready, Brian?
I'm ready.
I want you to go ahead and engage in those fantasies. But I want those fantasies before you actually finish. What happens is that you have to continue the fantasy, and here's how it goes. You're in the middle. It's going well. Bam, the door opens. George Bush walks in with Dick Cheney, with Wolfowitz, and with Alberto Gonzalez. Jenna wakes up, screams. You're standing there naked, and Alberto Gonzalez hooks electrodes to your testicles and goes to town. And here's what happens. Jenna, when this all happens, stops crying and just starts laughing at you. How's that?
Yeah, I'll never think about her the same way ever.
I'm glad it went that way.
Nice work,
went way. I was glad that you didn't find that appealing. All right, Brian, you all set?
Matt, one more thing.
What?
You definitely beat Sam Cedar the other night on Majority Report.
Thanks, buddy. Take it easy, Brian.
Take care, Brian.
For people don't know, but me and Sam Cedar had a slight public feud over nothing, really, and he had me on his show, and I tore him one. And but I known the guy forever. I didn't mean it to be mean, but he just, I don't know, he couldn't defend himself.
Didn't mean it to be mean, but he couldn't defend himself.
Okay, let's head into the darkness here. Brian and Everett, how are you? What's your sin?
Just the jealousy and grudge I have of withholding my intellectual property, I guess.
What happened? What are you talking about?
I leave messages on your recording, right?
Yes, we know.
Okay, now here's the deal. I may have said something about the Super Bowl halftime show, which I don't know if you got it from me or not, but about possibly having a beheading at the Super Bowl halftime show.
Oh, yeah, I sort of said that earlier.
But that's okay, but I decided to go at one better. Instead of holding a grudge, I could maybe elaborate on that.
Brian, let me put
Wilson performs an unnatural act with the head, and Charlie Daniels lights his fiddle on fire with lighter fluid, and the Teletubbies appear and pass out hypodermic needles.
Okay, hey, Brian, first of all, I didn't steal anything from you, because I don't really listen to the messages, but I've been told that you call a lot, and I like your imagery, and, I think that, do you have a confession of sorts?
Yeah, I'm just a loser.
No, Brian. That's not bad. You're not a loser. You're obviously up doing the big work, doing the big thinking.
Yeah.
No.
Unencumbered mind.
Yeah, that's great. That's called freedom, isn't it?
I have to convince everyone else of that, though.
Okay, all right, and how's that project going?
Well, I'm still taking the meds.
Okay, good. Well, that's good. What happens if you don't take the meds?
There's
Wow.
I know. You just have to taper off,
Wow, dude. What was it? You got your own sound effects going over there? That was you?
Wow, you're messing with my head.
No, I'm not. Hey, Brian, you take care of yourself. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks, man.
Okay,
take
bye.
Take care, Brian. That happened.
I thought he did that.
Brian's a fan of the show in Everett, who sometimes will leave, you know, a series of, you know, hour long messages.
Who does it?
Hey, you know, he's a big fan of the show, and he's got many shows going on simultaneously. But thanks for calling. I hope he's okay. Oscar, streaming in France. Good morning, Oscar. Oh no, it's not Oscar.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, good. Well, what's your sin, Oscar?
My sin is I was watching the Super Bowl at midnight, actually, because it started at midnight over here.
Mm-hmm.
And during the opening ceremony, when the whole bit with the military kicked in and the fighter jets and all that, I was basically just expressing myself, saying I was horrified by what I was seeing. I mean, it looked like such obvious propaganda to me.
Yeah, well, no, it definitely was. I don't think there's any shame or any sin in what you're saying. I think you're absolutely
right. No, but the sin, here comes the sin.
Oh.
Basically, I was saying this is awful, and Michael Douglas as well, just with his little spiel, and I was just, this is so bad, so bad. And this American girl that was in, because I work in an Irish pub, and we organized, like, all the Americans to come and watch this.
Uh-huh.
And they were all watching, and so I could see some of them were kind of soaking in this mini event, and feeling something, you know, the patriotism was definitely, you could see
creeping in, yeah.
Yeah, creeping, yeah, creep is a good word.
Yeah.
And basically, I was saying, this is awful, I can't believe this is not good, basically.
Uh-huh.
And this one American girl turned around, and she kind of, like, looked at me with scorn, and instead of engaging her, I just kind of put my head down and just didn't say anything.
Wow.
And I feel pretty ashamed about that.
Did she look good, at least?
Well, I almost slept with her because basically she said if we made a bet and if the Eagles won, I could have gone home with her, but they lost, so I was really upset about that, actually.
So I'm just trying to figure out what you're more disappointed and ashamed of.
not engaging her when I had my chance to speak up and tell her why I was upset about this, why this bothered me.
Okay.
Instead of going into a political discussion, because I didn't want to interrupt the atmosphere of, like, our joyful event of sharing the NFL.
Right. So, okay, I get it. So here you had all these group of Americans. You're an expat yourself. They're all getting all teary-eyed about these sort of militarizing, patriotic, jingoistic display in the great ceremony of the Super Bowl, and some woman caught your contempt. And you decided to override it because you saw somewhere a glimmer in her eye that there was a chance you might be able to.
It wasn't even there yet.
It wasn't even there yet.
To add
insult to injury, after that shame, you went ahead and hit on her anyways.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was the Super Bowl. The testosterone was just a bit too.
Well, it sounds like sense. Yeah. It sounds like that's what you call maybe a sexual drive for the wrong reasons. What do you think his penance is, Riley? I'm at a loss.
My let me tell you something. I think, Oscar, your penance might be to get yourself a huge bowl of buffalo wings. And do you know where this woman lives?
Here.
I know. That's why it's your penance. Do you know where she lives?
No, but it wouldn't be difficult to find out.
Okay. Show up at her door with some buffalo wings just in time to watch the Pro Bowl, which is still coming up.
Yeah.
The last game of the season.
Right, and then during the whole time, make sure you sit there and go, football's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so are American politics. And your jingoistic BS makes me sick. Have some wings. Am I turning you on yet? Try that.
Yeah.
It was a little complicated, Oscar, but thanks for your story. It was a good tale. Sometimes the penances aren't always perfect.
No.
That was the spicy one.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe we'll do better with this one. Sean in North Carolina, what's going on? What's your sin?
Hey, guys.
Yeah.
Hey.
I had a dream where I was found myself all cleaned up and wearing a suit and surrounded by white guys, and I had joined the Republican Party.
Oh.
Running for office. And so I don't know. I woke up and my bed was full of stock options. And then I decided, well, shoot, I should just go for it. I should go ahead and sign up with the guys. You know, at least, I'm a Republican.
Oh, man. So this is not.
There's a reason they call it, you know, the Irish Republican Socialist Party. You know?
So.
And then I couldn't do it. I started getting sick in my stomach.
Right.
Last minute. I just couldn't do it. I saw pictures of Dick Cheney appearing in my post office box.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So
you were
going to join the Republican Party.
Yeah.
and you know, you actually felt that that was a good idea. What's his
parents? Yeah, I was thinking that was a thing to do.
I don't know. I'm at a loss on this one.
Yeah. Well, then I think the only thing you can do is now you have to act, just even for having that thought in your subconscious, you have to go out and join the Green Party.
Yeah.
All right, buddy. Take care, man. Thanks for calling. Wow.
Does the Green Party even have a chapter in North Carolina? Maybe.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, he has to start the chapter.
There you go. Start a Green Party in North Carolina.
Oh, I'm going to take this one more call. I got scared there. I thought Brian called back. Nah, he's all right. Elaine, what's your sin, Elaine?
My sin?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I did my taxes, and I'm getting a whole bunch of money back.
Yeah.
A whole bunch of money back.
All right.
And I want this money. You know, I need it. I'm a single mom. I've got two kids. And, you know, $4,200 is awesome. But, like, shouldn't I feel bad because the, you know, there's the deficit and all those programs are being cut? And anyway,
it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, but you have two kids.
Yeah.
So I'd say if you feel that guilty, go, you know, buy them something, like, you know, but how about food?
Yeah, right.
Why don't you put some of the money away for their education since no one's going to help out with that? What do you think?
I shouldn't feel guilty about the deficit and how, you know, I'm getting this because W's not, you know, taking care of stuff, right?
That doesn't quite make sense. No,
people have been getting money back from their taxes before W.
Yeah, and believe me, if you were to send them some money back just out of your guilt, like, look, could you just put this towards the national debt? Believe me, it would be wasted.
Get a thank you card.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, stay. If you feel that guilty, put a couple of grand into a college account for those kids because there's certainly not going to be much state help for that when the future comes upon us.
That was a good one, actually.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, I like that. We got another hour and it's coming up. We're going to parse that budget a little bit more. We've got the iNews 5000 coming up and so much more for you here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Good morning.
We've been going at it for 2 hours here. Yeah, it has been. It's been a good morning, though, man. I'm thrilled with some of our fans, Mark Riley. I mean, this woman, Penelope, in Casper, Wyoming, sends us a box of goodies, a very eclectic sort of regional box of goodies. No, I'm serious. She sent us a little copper cowboy boot for holding toothpicks. She sent us a tour guide of Wyoming. She sent us a series of postcards. She sent us a picture of some property near her house with a herd of pronghorn antelope on it. Don't you wish you lived there?
Where the deer and the antelope play.
At least for a few minutes.
Yeah.
You ever get that thing where you're like, God, you know, all I want is just a little house up in the country, you know, maybe with some chickens, you know, and no television, no nothing.
That was just my mother's dream.
Just me and some chickens in a little house. And then I, when I think about that for too long, I go, all right, tell me about day three. What happens on the third day when I'm sitting there going, wow, there are those chickens again. How about those chickens? This is terrific. I'm going to take a walk up the hill. Yep. Look at that. All right, tell me about day four. Wow, man, I wonder what Riley's up to. I wonder if Kayla went to Costco. Man, I'm done with this. But she sent us a jackalope postcard as I talked to her earlier, and I saw a side of Clutch Larson and Brendan McDonald that did nothing but thrill me. I'm sitting there. We're opening this box. Also, she sent a bag of Valentine's Day M&Ms, which I'm trying to, you know, I haven't had M&Ms in a long time because there was a concern over my, of it triggering
sugar jones,
manic episodes on the, when I stopped drinking coffee first thing in the morning and doing the M&Ms, Brendan was like, oh my God, you can never drink coffee. And you remember like early on when I was like, ah! All right. So anyways, So Brendan's looking at the Jackalope postcard. I mean, he's looking at it right here. It is right there. See the Jackalope postcard?
Yeah, yeah. Let me take a close yeah. look at
it. I mean,
this.
I grew up with this. I grew up in New Mexico, so I grew up with the Jackalope postcard. I grew up with this sort of we catch them big out here with the trouts on the pickup trucks, you know. So Brendan's looking at it. He actually says, like, man, it just seems so unnecessary. I mean, it's such a weird animal that it would have antlers. It doesn't make any sense. And I'm like, that's because it's not a real animal. And he's like, really? I didn't know. I'm like, what are you? Yeah, it's a chimera. Is that what it is? A chimera. Chimera. It's a fiction. It's a taxidermy trick. It's something they used to bring people into curio shops with. It's a mythological beast made for postcards. And there used to be like signs along the highway. See the jackalope. But the most impressive thing is that Larson didn't know. Which, if I could just, I was wrong.
Oh,
that was, that's Jonathan Larson, our producer who knows everything. I was wrong. Did not know that the jackalope was not some sort of evolutionary conundrum that needed explaining. But he came into the studio after I said that the first time, because I talked about this earlier on the show. Mm-hmm. And he goes, it is an evolutionary conundrum, just not that way. It is evolutionary, but it's not animal evolution. There is a human need to have the jackalope created for a specific purpose, which we didn't get into. You know why?
Why?
Because I got tired.
Well, you know, thing, according to this, it can only be hunted on June 31st. That should give you a clue right there.
It may not be real. Didn't it say it can only be milked, too? Like, a native of Wyoming, the jackalope has never been captured alive. Wow. We just can't seem, no matter how advanced we get as a culture, we can't seem to catch up to the rabbit with the horns. Because, you know, that's got to be a graceful thing if it lives and exists in reality. It's like, oh, we missed it again. How do we catch these rabbits with horns that would get them stuck on branches and things? All right, wait. All right, June. It can only be hunted on June 31st between sunrise and sunset. It mimics noises, especially the human voice, and runs at lightning speed. Therefore, the jackalope is seldom seen, except in this photograph, which apparently he was able to stand still for. But he probably told the guy, hey, buddy, don't tell anybody about this, because it mimics human voices.
Make up.
All right. Some folks drink jackalope milk to cure eccentricities. I guess those are the special people that are able to stop it when it's going at lightning speed and aren't baffled by its ability to speak English.
Yeah.
All right, we've buried that myth. But again, Penelope, very thoughtful gift, sent a CD for Kalo that we got to give him.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Caramel-centered, kisses.
Hershey's kisses.
And look at that. She sent a recipe. Here's a picture of her dogs. I know so much about Penelope in Wyoming. And she sent this beautiful. I can't believe that this state, has to deal with Dick Cheney, but they do.
They do.
Look at the buffalo. Oh, there's pictures of buffalo and bears and geese. This is ridiculous. Why am I getting involved with this? Thank you so much for that. And as I said before, she sent a recipe for chipotle hummus because I am now only eating fish. And of course, being the house man that I am, I immediately went home and made it, and it was terrific. Thank you. What a nice fan.
You like that wide open space thing, though. I can tell.
I love it.
Because you grew up in New Mexico.
I'm not an ocean guy, man. You know, some people are like, I just like to sit on the beach. I'm like, oh, no. I get in the sand, and it's hot, and I got, tell me about day two of that. But, get me into the mountains and the big place. I used to love driving from Albuquerque to Santa Fe. They're just the mesas and the colors, and, yeah, I am definitely a wide open space cat. There's no doubt about that. So we got a Palm Pilot earlier, which I thought was pretty funny. This came in from Ramon, who was wearing an accountant's visor, and he apparently been crunching numbers all night. Here's George Bush's Palm Pilot for, I believe it's for today, maybe. We're going to do it. 7 a.m., breakfast, half a grapefruit. The cutbacks start now. 8 a.m., review budget cuts. Note, more than 150 programs cut outright or cut back. Take that, Reagan. Take it. 10 a.m., cut budget for substance abuse and mental services. Note, there's no excuse for drinking. None. 1 p.m., eliminate $9 million for treating people with traumatic brain injury. Note, they'll never know. 3 p.m., add $150 million for Laura's anti-gang recruitment program. Then add 50 cents. See, I'm down. 50 cents. See? Yeah? Nah. 5 p.m., increased budget for abstinence program to $193 million. Note, we can stamp out teen erections in our lifetime, people. In our lifetime.
Wow.
Kalo Root Canal. Root Canal Kalo. Man, it's been a great week already. We're already 2 days in. The booth is filled with human beings. As Clutch Larson, Peter McDonald, Kent the Colonel, Jones is in the room. We got to talk about Dean.
Yeah.
Because it looks like Howard Dean's going to be the guy.
Last man standing.
Tim Romer is supposed to be on the show yesterday.
Canceled out.
Would not say why. Although
we knew why. I'm out. Why couldn't he have made the announcement on Morning Sedition? He could have made the announcement with us.
Yeah,
he could have told us, what, is there no trust?
I don't know what it is. I mean, I guess he wanted it to be a surprise.
Yeah.
I don't know why. That's a good
question. Well, you know, he's warning people, if you don't move the party back toward the center, we're never going to win another election. Nobody wants to hear that.
We're going to win another election. We're going to win another election with Howard Dean at the helm. We'll come back and we'll talk about Howard Dean. We'll talk about some of the views that he has on record about the Democratic Party and what needs to happen and where it needs to go. It's all very exciting stuff to me. And we'll talk a little bit about the budget. We're going to talk to James Walcott later in the hour on the phone about the Super Bowl, I believe. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Rock and roll! Who's that? Oh, it is? How did I not know that? 18 past the hour. Mark Maron here on Morning Sedition. I had you play an Aerosmith song before we got on the air today. I had a craving to hear Chip Away at the Stone. I guess I just feel like I'm not identifying the middle of that song. What song was it? Do you know?
Yes, it is Heart's Done Time.
Oh, I wonder how old that is. I sort of like, it's way old. What am I? I feel stupid now. I feel like I know at least the first four Aerosmith albums. Not a big issue.
Poser.
I am not a poser. I know if the first one rocks, what is the third one? I know the first three or four albums. Toys in the Attic, I know, but that's probably on Toys in the Attic, isn't it? No, it's not. Oh man, you know what? I'm not going to spin down this hole. I'm not going to let it bother me. I love Aerosmith. I like their first four albums. Here we go. It's that time of the morning when we look at the nation's most prestigious newspapers. Now, sometimes when you read the headlines, it's tough to figure out what the mainstream media is saying. So I've got a brand new iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator, and we are going to feed it some headlines. From the New York Times, Abbas and Sharon begin meeting in Egypt. Let's put that into the machine. Let's see what it comes up with. Translation. Palestinians, Israelis pause to reload. Yes. Here we go. From the Fox News. Terror attack kills 14 in Iraq. Let's throw that in there. See what that did. Look at that thing go. Wow. Translation. It's Tuesday. From E! Online, all quiet on the Jackson front. Translation, nothing happening, but Jackson's still our lead story. How do you like that? I love this machine. Headline translator. I'm telling you, one day we got to get Brendan in to do that song.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's the music sound like? Hey, here's a jackalope. The jackalope coming. 21 past the hour here. We're talking about now Howard Dean. Looks like he's the only guy left standing. That didn't take long, and there was not much resistance. Was it? Just a sort of trickling away. There
our man go. Tim. Well, actually, it all happened in the space of about a week.
Right.
I think three people dropped out January 31st and then February 1st, which was just last week. And we roll up until yesterday. And, of course, we were scheduled to have Tim Romer, who was the last person still contesting for the chairmanship of the DNC. And Sunday we get a call from our people, get a call from his people saying, well, he can't do the interview. Why? He can't do the interview. Is he dropping out? he can't do the interview.
Yeah, they were all a little cagey. When we talked to Donnie Fowler, he was a little cagey. But I guess they sort of knew. I guess they were all just like, you know, living trial balloons because the momentum was definitely behind Howard Dean at the beginning, at the get-go, right?
Yeah, it was behind him, but there were a lot of people who were trying to work to stop that momentum the same way they did during his presidential run.
Mm-hmm.
In this instance, they have not been successful. Now, the question then becomes, will any of the centrist Democrats who are involved in either fundraising or funding the Democratic Party back away because of Howard Dean? My guess is that won't happen, but you never know.
Yeah, but the thing is like, you know, he just doesn't believe that that you need to pander to this mythical center. And I just don't think that, you know, with somebody like him spearheading the party, you know, ideologically, that leaves plenty of room. You know, if they want to believe there's a center and they are it, well, then so be it. But that doesn't, you know, if he represents the extreme version of what Democratic ideology is about, not left, but just sort of like, you know, sticking to our core values without pandering to, you know, religious fanatics or compromising on what they call moral issues, but we generally frame as human rights issues, then, you know, so be it. Then what the hell difference does it make? Doesn't mean they shouldn't give money to their own party.
I think at a point, Howard Dean's biggest challenge is mm-hmm. going to be to ramp up the party's credentials on making Americans feel safe. If you look at some of the polling that took place after the November election, you find that a lot of it had to do, a lot of the swing toward Bush had to do with staying with somebody in the middle of a war and feeling safer with that person than they did with John Kerry.
So you're saying that Howard Dean has to put a concerted effort into figuring out a way to scare the hell out of the bulk of the people in this country to the point where they don't know where else to turn but the Democratic Party?
No! All they got to do, all he's really got to do is burnish the party's credentials and maybe come up or, you know, encourage some candidates for office to come up with some new and innovative ways to keep us safe. Remember something. There are, 1% of all the containers that come through American ports get inspected by anybody.
Right.
Well, solve that. You got a way to say, I'm helping to make Americans safer. Chuck Schumer is the one that's all over that.
Well, so you're saying that basically the Democrats have to focus in on the myth of safety that the Republicans put forward and really focus in on, you know, where we are vulnerable, why we are still vulnerable, where that money really went, what's really going on with that, and saying, look, they're lying. There are still a lot of problems here in terms of securing this country.
Absolutely. And again, we don't know where the war in Iraq is going to go. All right, we're now in 2005. The election is not till 2008. There's a very real possibility, first of all, that if troops are still in Iraq, if American troops are still in Iraq by 2007, that's going to be something that Howard Dean and the Democratic Party are going to have to jump all over.
Right.
They got no choice.
Well, here's a few quotes from Howard Dean and what he stands for. Quote, Democrats can win by simply being Democrats. Reinventing ourselves as Republicans is the death knell of our party. We need to get back to basics and start listening to people from outside Washington. Only then can we save the greatest nation on the face of the earth from the twin Republican perils of enormous deficits and constant misadventures abroad, end quote. Here's another quote that sort of fleshes out the Constitution says power belongs to the people, not the president. Quote from Dean, people have a right to be angry with Bush. He is a president who appears sometimes to care more about the special interest that is his political policies help, that his political policies help, rather than ordinary Americans. That is certainly true. End quote there. That is certainly true in terms of what he wants to do with restricting victims' rights through legislation. It certainly has to do with, you know, how he handles health care in this country. The neoconservative agenda is dangerous for America. Here's a quote from Dean illustrating that. Quote, the neoconservative movement, which has captured this administration, has done enormous harm in American and in America and to our standing in the world. That, end quote. Well, that's clear. That's not that's not brain surgery.
No.
How about this quote? Quote, younger voters have a lot more to lose from the Bush administration than my generation does. Because of the Bush tax cuts, young people will be saddled with the largest debt in American history. We need a change in this country, and young voters are driving that change, end quote. Now, that's where he's going to make a difference.
That's where the opportunity lies, because the Republicans are trying to scare these young people with the whole idea they won't have any Social Security money by the time they get ready to retire, that whole thing. Dean appealed very directly to young people. I saw this with my own two eyes when there was a Democratic debate here in Lower Manhattan, where, I mean, he was literally electrifying people half his age, and there are very few people in their 50s, or I think his age is in his 50s. Anyway, very few people able to do that. I saw him do it. That's lightning in a bottle. That's where he's going to make the difference.
Yeah, and if he gets those people excited, believe me, whoever they are who think that they are in the center will follow.
Oh, they will follow, yeah, because centrists tend to sometimes be followers.
Sure, of course. I mean, and if he can build the momentum with the young people, get them excited about the re-engaging in the democratic process for realsies.
Yes.
That would be great. We'll be back. We got James Walcott coming up, and maybe we'll get to... And, yeah, we got Planet Bush.
Yeah! Here on Air America Radio.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Happy to be alive in an angry way. 34 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Me too.
This is a morning's edition on Air America Radio. Actually, I live for this, man. I love this show. Love hanging out with you guys. It's my whole life. It's my whole life. Other than that, it's just me and talking to cats. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So now on the phone once again is Planet Bush correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Hey, good morning, Mark. God's making salsa, and he's smashing up sin tomatoes.
Well, that's great. That's great.
It's delicious.
All right, buddy, let's talk about Howard Dean. It looks like he's going to become the chairman of the Democratic National Committee, my friend.
Mm-hmm. Let me say this.
Okay.
Speaking for all the white, God-fearing, heterosexual, tax-avoiding, gun-owning, conservative patriots on Planet Bush, thank you, DNC. Thank you.
What do you mean?
Well, with Dean as DNC chair, y'all got about as much chance of winning as a hog has of squeezing through a nap.
All right. Come on.
Howard Dean, he's a liberal Frankenstein.
No.
Northeastern, Jesus-bashing, arrogant peacenik abortionist backed by a coterie of America-hating liberty freak.
Come on.
You know what kind of people supported Dean last year?
Yes, I do. Lawton, all kinds of people. Lawton, all kinds of people supported Dean.
Janine Garofalo.
All right. Yeah.
Okay.
Friend
of mine. To get so rough. Here's a hand, buddy. I'm helping you up from the can.
Look, she's a friend of mine. Come on. I'm just curious, buddy. In your opinion,
Janine,
what is so wrong? What is so wrong with Howard Dean? What?
Here we go. First of all, he's from Vermont, which is part of Canada.
No, it's not.
They're Frenchier than a wheel of brie up there. I looked it up. They got towns called Montpelier and Burlington and Brattleboro. French. You know, in French, the word Vermont means marijuana.
No, it doesn't.
The Democrats have some peculiarities, but shouldn't your leader be an American?
No, it's not. Oh, come on.
Minimum standards.
I don't believe that.
Janine Garofalo.
Look, Vermont is not part of Canada. Well, it never was.
All right, hang on now. The real problem, you just did it, is the Democrats are full of hate.
Oh, come
on. He's a hater. He's a screaming hater. Do you know why he's so angry?
Why?
His height, Mark.
Yes.
Howard Dean is a freakishly small individual.
Come on, come on.
With uncontrollable rage.
Come on.
He'd be angry, too, if you were 4'8".
No,
a man who can't get on a roller coaster at Six Flags should not be the leader of a political party. I hear at social functions, people set drinks on his head.
No, stop
they
it.
Forget he's there.
He said Dean is like 5'10", his average height in this country. And what does that have to do with anything, Lawton? Come on. What?
Stature, Mark. Stature.
What?
Look at George W. Van two terms Bush. That man is 6'9".
No, he's not.
That's why the parents hate him.
No.
He casts a long shadow.
He's not 6'9".
He's closer to God.
He's not 6'9".
He can touch him from there. He can touch the hem of his garment.
Stop it. Bush is 5'11", and God doesn't want anything to do with him, all right?
Oh.
Come on, Lawton. Even you have to admit that Dean is a very capable guy. Very smart, passionate, engaging.
Howard Dean never made it past the fourth grade. Everyone knows that.
He's a doctor.
Well, if he's a doctor, then he shouldn't be poking around on folks with nothing but a fourth grade education.
Wait a minute.
Anywhere you look at it. Dean should just stay in Vermont where he can't hurt anybody.
What is that supposed to mean, Lawton?
You know, everybody knows that governors can't function outside their own home state.
What?
You put them on the national stage, and they fold up like a Cambodian doing origami.
What does that mean?
Look at Clinton. All right, no grasp of world affairs whatsoever.
Stop it. That's not true.
None. You can take the man out of Little Rock. You can't take Little Rock out of the man.
Lawton. What about Bush? He was a state governor, George W. Bush.
Texas isn't a state, Mark. That's like saying Vermont's not in Canada.
What are you talking
Texas
about?
Has its own language, its own currency, its
right,
own military.
Okay.
It's a completely different place.
I get it now, Lawton. I see it. I get it. Dean terrifies you, doesn't he? His energy, his intelligence, his passion. You're worked up because he scares the crap out of you, and you know it. Dean scares you.
He scares me.
Yes.
Get the old Democrats cheered up, motivated. We'll be out of power for a generation.
Yes.
The kids love him. People just get stronger and Bush
That's
will
right.
get weaker.
That's
we're
right.
screwed.
Let it
we
out.
Already took our best shots at him.
That's
and
right.
He won't lie down.
That's
He's
it.
Not human.
That's right. There you go. Let it out, buddy. Let
He's
it out.
He's like a robot. He's just
Look at what you're really made out of.
Coming
Let it out.
Coming
it's okay,
Terminator.
Bud. It's okay, bud. It's all right.
Terminator.
It's okay, man. It's okay. Oh, you all right? Jesus. Is it okay? What?
Have y'all thought about Joe Lieberman?
No.
He's nice and friendly.
No.
We can treat him
no.
like a kitty cat.
Dude.
Ralph Reed.
Ralph, oh, great. Yeah, Ralph Reed. Yeah. Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you. Deal with it.
All right.
Think about Ralph
Reed. Oh, no, you crazy. Get off the phone. Oh, my God.
Ralph Reed.
Could you imagine that?
There's a DNC chair for
him. We haven't seen the end of that guy, that Ralph Reed guy. He'll be back. That guy's dangerous. That guy gives me the willies. Now, on the phone, contributing editor to Vanity Fair, author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, alluding of the news in a time of terror, is a regular guest here on our show. Please welcome James Walcott. Good morning, James.
Good morning, gentlemen. That was very disturbing.
It's all disturbing.
Yeah,
some days, James. Look, I'm gonna present this question like this, sir. Mm-hmm. I did not watch the Super Bowl. Tell me what I missed.
Well, what you missed mostly was in the beginning in terms of the sort of social import we always inject into these things, you know,
yeah.
into this empty spectacle. And it was basically the militarization of the whole build-up to the show. I mean, in a way, it was almost a carryover from the inaugural, where everywhere you look, there were soldiers. But here it was not.
They weren't just watching the perimeter of the stadium.
No, well, they were doing that. I mean, you did have because they would tell you how tight security was. But we had fighter planes zooming over. We had other planes. There was a tribute to World War II veterans. Now, I have nothing against World War. I mean, but what were they doing? Walking on in the field like they were, like they had wandered in from a Tom Hanks, Steven Spielberg tribute.
So they weren't honoring the separation of church or of military and sports, huh?
Oh no, it was a total merger. And then it carried over into the most the commercial that was one of the most talked about and in many ways the most maudlin, which was a commercial. It was a beer commercial, and it was soldiers returning from duty and going through an airport, and one by one, the passengers waiting in the terminal stand up and give them applause, thanking them for what they've done. Now, it's a sentiment that you really can't argue with it because, I mean, our troops are over there in absolutely hellish conditions, put over there, not by decisions that they made. But there was something about exploiting that sentiment for sentimentality that when you mixed it in with all the other military imagery, it was like they were gearing us up for another one.
Another war. So did it feel like maybe Leni Riefenstahl directed this whole event?
Well, I'll tell you, Leni would have been proud. She'd have given a withered thumbs up to the halftime show with Paul McCartney because he was doing bland Beatle tunes, but the lighting, the fireworks, the imagery that was projected on various, screens, and some of them made no sense. I mean, when he was singing Hey Jude, they would flash the Statue of Liberty,
Wow.
As if the Statue of Liberty should start swaying. And as McCartney was performing, they had all these hired extras who were, I would say, at least 40 years younger than him. I mean, they were not born when the Beatles were around, but they were faking being excited. I mean, it was sort of like a college production of Bye Bye Birdie, you know? And it was all choreographed so that when he went into the big chorus of Hey Jude, they all swung back and forth rhythmically, holding lights in their hands, electric lights, because it's too dangerous for people to light matches now, right?
Right.
So they have to hold little electric, you know, torches as they're swaying. And, I mean, it was. I mean, a different sort of performer, it would have been sort of almost semi-fashed, except with Paul McCartney. He's sort of our granddad now, so it didn't have that quite menacing quality.
James Walcott, the thing that troubles me about the Super Bowl more than anything else is the idea that it has suddenly elevated the television commercial into the realm of news. I don't know how much stuff I saw. I saw countdowns of the greatest commercials of all time. I've seen all. I mean, it's taken the television commercial apparently and elevated it way beyond anything I think that advertisers thought.
Well. Maybe I don't know. I think it's clearly what they dream, because they give hints all year. Well, this is what we're going to do. And one of the things it proves to me is that every year we go through this rigmarole about the commercials, and every year the commercials are dreadful. I mean, what it really proves is that television advertising in this country really is in a terribly unimaginative state. They rely entirely on computer-generated imagery, a few funny punchlines, cheesy celebrities from the past who were willing to make fun of themselves. This year it was MC Hammer who was willing to do it. And the fact is, when they show you the great commercials of Super Bowl past, often these commercials go back 10, 15 years. I mean, perhaps the most famous remains the one that Apple did. I believe it was the one that was called 1984, where Amazonian woman. So the commercials are mostly dreadful. What they weren't this year was they weren't vulgar.
Well, you know, it's like, James, I want to just address the idea that we live in a culture now. I know we accept this, and when we come back from the break, I mean, you're talking about this is like a tribute to the mining of our desires, you know, and also like the idea that we live in a culture where it's like, aren't you even going to watch it for the commercials? I think there's something, you know, corrupt and sad about that we're even having this conversation, that the integrity of the advertising is not what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about that when we come back?
Absolutely.
All right, 45 past the hour. We're talking to James Walcott. You're listening to Air America Radio.
I'm the Reverend Al Sharpton, reminding you that listening to any radio show beside Morning's Edition is officially considered selling out to the man. So keep it tuned here to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
We're going to land this thing at 50 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yep.
The show has been and is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. We're on the phone with contributing editor to Vanity Fair and author of Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, the looting of the news in a time of terror. James Walcott, we're talking about the Super Bowl, the spectacle. We're talking about living in a culture where people say, hey, even if you don't like football, you should watch it for the ads. And to me, that signals somehow the end of times. I don't know why. I see it as a dark thing.
Well,
do we have to accept that? I mean, is there any way to really sort of ironically detach from what is being done?
Well, no, because I think the problem, I mean, I think it's probably better not to watch it altogether, because the problem with ironically detaching is people think that's what they're doing all the time anyway. We have a culture that really prides itself on its phony sophistication about the messages we're being sent and television and the media. We think that we see through it. I mean, people talk that way. But the fact is, it works. It still works on us. I mean, we will look at, for example, Bush standing in front of, you know, one of those backdrops in which it's repeatedly painted, making our economy stronger, making our economy stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And we laugh at that, and we should laugh at that. And yet, obviously, on some level, it's working on people.
Right.
Because they wouldn't keep doing it. They wouldn't keep doing the really hokey photo ops if the photo ops didn't work. And in the same, it's the same way with commercials and other sort of, you know, branding things that are done. People make jokes about it. They act ironically superior, but clearly it's working and taking over. Yeah, the irony doesn't diffuse any of it.
Right, because they're playing on that too. They've exploited our ironic detachment, and they kind of they utilize that and integrate it into the ads themselves.
Right. I mean, that's one of the things there's a book out. In fact, I've heard the authors on Air America discussing how the counterculture is not the same as a true.
Yeah, that's
we had them on.
They were on our show.
Right.
I love
your show.
I love that book.
Because the thing is that what advertisers can do, what all marketers can do, is they can plug into the countercultural attitudes, the irony, the sneers. Again, one of the things they do is they use stars, stars from failed TV series or stars in the 70s, because they know that, oh, it hits on a generational level, but also on the level of, this is all on a level of pretend.
Yeah, but it obviously that, you know, I have these theories about that myself. That guy, Heath and Potter, the guys who wrote the book, how the counterculture, how consumerism, now it eludes me. But nonetheless, he's going to be on this week with Thomas Frank. But the thing that gets me is that we don't think we live in almost a completely fabricated world here. You know, James, is that like, you know, even when I'm sitting on, I was talking about this yesterday. I don't want an iPod, you know, but I'm.
I don't have one. I wonder now if in the future anyone will be able to identify criminals or suspects on the street, because everyone's got that umbilical white cord plugged into their ear and they're all turned inward.
Yeah, exactly.
Their eyes are turned inward.
But on some level, you know, Eric Fromm, the psychologist, he once talked about, you know, that we'll get a point to where our engagement with machines will sort of make us facilitate. They're zombies. Mm. They're detached from reality.
Well, the great avatar of that, he saw it before anybody, was Andy Warhol, because Andy Warhol said that he wanted to be a machine, you know, because people were too messy. People were too complicated.
Yeah.
And so there's a simplicity in that. But also it's a way, you know, the whole thing of our entertainment centers, our home entertainment centers, it's a way of withdrawing from the world. And so now people with their iPods, their headsets, they're withdrawn from the world even when they're out in it, even when they're walking around, even when they're on the subway. I mean, to me, one of the great things about being in New York is knowing what's going on around you, because there's often something really weird going on around you.
That's how I feel.
But, Jim, I mean, didn't this really kind of start with the Walkman? I mean, the whole personalization of a music environment predates the iPod, doesn't it?
It does, and certainly, you know, people carried around. But I don't recall, except at the very beginning, people were not, they did not have almost like the iPod was their baby. The Walkman was, I would see a lot of people using it like who were jogging, who were on treadmills, and you would see people, like some people out.
And also the Walkman wasn't demanding. I mean, the iPod requires homework. It requires that, you know, you create your song list every day. You download your CDs. And between that and programming your phone and checking your email, that is 12 hours a day, man. All you got time is, you know, for a little sleep and maybe, you know, a couple hours of TV.
Well, the iPod is a brilliant fetish object. I mean, it's pure white. It's almost like holding a prayer in your hand. You know,
Yeah, they got you.
You know, maybe I should get the small one, the little, you know, the shuffle one, because then I could listen to television on my iPod. You know, Tom Verlaine. You know that. It's all part of like disengaging us. And the thing is, over the last 30 years, it's really worked.
Yeah, I have to disengage now.
Yeah.
It has worked, and it's been great talking to you, James.
It's been great talking to you.
Next time you come in the
you.
Studio.
I will come in. I'll zoom down. I'll bring donuts.
Oh, that would be great. James Walcott, thank you very much. The book is Attack Poodles and Other Media Mutants, The Looting of the News in a Time of Culture. The book that we're referring to is A Nation of Rebels, How the Counterculture Became Consumer Culture. He's going to be on. Joseph or Andrew Potter will be on with Thomas Frank this Friday.
All right.
Here we go. Here is the facts from the liberal from the Streisand compound. Here's your liberal agenda for today. One, parade around drunk wearing beads. Note, also do something for Mardi Gras. There you go. Two, condemn Israeli-Palestinian peace talks. They could completely ruin your anti-Zionist Oscar acceptance speech. You know who you are. Three, praise Fidel Castro for banning smoking in public places in Cuba. Now it really is paradise. Four, condemn mud wrestling by military personnel in Iraq as a waste of precious topsoil. And five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, there's one place where you can cut the budget, man. I know one guy on the government payroll who hasn't done a thing in 4 years. Wake up, sheeple, the dead wood's in the White House. Yeah, man. Who do we got tomorrow, Riley? And
we're going to have a good, I'm looking forward to this. Writer and activist Keith Boykin joins us. He's going to talk about race, sexuality, and the invisible black gay man. I'm looking forward to that a
me
lot.
Me too.
See you tomorrow. All happy right, Fat Tuesday, Marin.
All right. You call me Fat?